are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Wednesday, September 6, 2017. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the four-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. Protests and pleas as Trump administration crushes dreamers. Hurricane Harvey may end up saving us from a debt ceiling crisis. While the West is on fire, Irma is huge, and why Rush Limbaugh tells its audience it's all a hoax. Republicans, meanwhile, are starting to quietly try and quash the Mueller investigation. Democrats make a less than quiet change to anti-monopoly policies. And the UN reports that dozens of chemical attacks have taken place in Syria. White helmets notwithstanding. Senate starts to hold hearings to fix the ACA while it still remains under attack. The clock is ticking. And the trial that starts yesterday, Senator Menendez in New Jersey, may be implicated. And Betsy DeVos, on the eve of pulling back on campus rape protections, pulls back on student loan fraud protections. Lastly, Dems launch a super PAC to win back state houses. All this and more on today's program. Just another day of news for us as we catch up from the week gone by. A couple of stories I wanted to talk about that I didn't get to yesterday because obviously so much is going on. And, you know, we went right before we had gone on air yesterday. Jeff Sessions had given a press conference, I guess. I don't know. Would you call it a press conference? It was really more of an announcement. He didn't take any questions. He just sat there sort of gleefully talking about how they were rescinding the executive order that essentially created DACA. And now, I just want to explain this to you, too, because we went through this, and we went through it relatively quickly in terms of Jeff Sessions yesterday. But the argument that the administration is making, and you hear repeated over and over again, is that what the Obama administration did was unconstitutional. This is a total fabrication. Like I say, it's perfectly legal for Donald Trump to announce, or his attorney general to announce, we're just going to reverse this policy. They can do that, but they don't even have the guts to do it. They're couching it in this notion that it was unconstitutional. And let me just very quickly, before we get to what I want to talk about today, make it clear why that's bullcrap. And we touched on it just briefly yesterday, but there is virtually, and why they had to do this before the lawsuit from these 10 states. 10 states had threatened to sue the administration as of like September 5th or something, or 6th or 9th, if they didn't reverse it. Folks like Chris Kobach, and I think it's, maybe it was Abbott in Texas. I can't remember who the AG is there now. And no one refutes the idea that the administration, or any administration, has the right to set immigration policy in terms of enforcement. Right? There was a change. We have seen a change by the Trump administration in that regard. They no longer prioritize gang members over mothers who have been here for 25 years and have had committed no crimes. They've made that change. There's none of these attorney generals in these states are threatening to sue the administration over that change. The Obama administration had a document that said, we're going to go specifically after undocumented immigrants who may pose a national security risk. Well, when they do that with limited resources, you are specifically adding, maybe unarticulated or maybe articulated, a class of people who you're not going to go after because you don't have the resources. And that's all the Obama administration did. They simply said, we are going to, this group of people, we are not a priority for us. If you came to this country after or before 2007, you are under the age of 15, you are now under the age of 35, we're not going to go after you. We're going to defer action on you. That's what they're going to do. And then, once action has been deferred and their status has changed, or they are allowed an exception to be in the country at least temporarily, the Attorney General, both by regulation from 1981 and by federal statute from 1986, is allowed to provide them temporary work permission. So when you look at DACA, it's not one, it is really a group of regulations that emanate from the president's more or less prosecutorial power, if you want to call it that, discretion, and the laws emanate from that. So the idea that this is unconstitutional is absurd. It's absurd on its face. It's not only not unconstitutional, it's not contrary to statute. But they will say this because, and we've had listeners on this program who have called in the fun half. I'm not going to name any names, Doug. But claiming to be constitutional conservatives. And so the administration knows they can just say the word constitution and it gets people to jump. It's really a substitute for white supremacy, more often than not. So I just want to make that absolutely clear. And then there were other lies that that Sessions gleefully passed on. But that's the foundational argument that this is unconstitutional. And then after that, it's just about politics. And so basically what you have is not that the Trump administration's hand was forced, not that they were remedying some unconstitutional breach. In fact, I think Jeff Sessions, unless there is a new directive from the Office of Legal Counsel in the Department of Justice, his own Department of Justice said it was not unconstitutional. This is just a policy decision. So now it's in the hands of Congress. And what will Congress do? Well, here is Morning Joe.
Who had nothing to do with getting us here.
Right. As a member of Newt Gingrich's Reagan Revolution crew.
Contract with America. Was that a friendly document towards immigrant communities?
Or I would say nothing in terms of espousing. I mean, I'm old enough to remember Scarborough's Country. That was the name of the show.
I literally don't even know. That was
the
first
show. That was the name
show.
Of the show on MSNBC. And I got news for you. It was slightly different than the country he lives in now, where three of the primetime shows are not him and Pat Buchanan and, you know, Jerry Nachman, but instead the highest rated shows on cable television, which are liberal leaning. That's how old I am. So I'm old. And here he is, Joe Scarborough, just shocked that somehow today's Republican Party, I mean, I don't know where he was in 2005 when Karl Rove thought this was the way that the Republicans were going to get the majority. So they were pushing for immigration reform, and the Republican Party just lost it. The idea that they would do, in fact, this entire movement was as much about immigration as anything else. But here he seems to be completely shocked that Paul Ryan can't find the votes.
That's the problem, Congressman. They do not have the votes. They need a president to help them get the votes. They can't do it on their own. They don't have it.
You don't think they have the votes?
No, on nothing.
Oh, my God. On DACA, you don't think they've got 51 votes?
Only if they in the House, they'd have to like get a lot of Democratic votes.
They're going to get every Democratic vote.
Yeah, but
they're going to get every Democratic vote.
Democrats are going to ask for something in return.
Well, then you know what you do?
Give it to them.
You give it to them. You know why? Because that's how our founding fathers saw the Constitution of the United States. There's give and take.
Casey.
Casey, every Democrat would vote for this. This is not rocket science. You start with 48 votes. In the United States Senate for Dreamer legislation. I can already name you four senators that are on board there. You start with every member of Nancy Pelosi's caucus. This is not hard.
Yeah, but, you know, for Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell, they'd still rather be with the president than with Nancy Pelosi or Chuck Schumer. It's as simple as that.
But if they're not smart enough to be able to pass this and say, I'm not with Nancy Pelosi, I'm with 75% of the American people, then they really don't deserve to be in their position. They should just go into a dark basement in Janesville and tweet for the rest of their life. This is not hard.
Yeah. Apparently, it is a lot harder for the Republicans. Can't imagine where that came from. It's amazing how much Donald Trump has changed, isn't it? Over the past, he used to be
He was in on the joke. He would say things like Mexicans are rapists with sort of a Don Wrinkles twinkle in his eye.
Yeah,
and he used to end all of his bits with, we all need to love each other.
That's right. That's right. His racism and misogyny always came with a wink.
Right.
Now, not so much.
That's the way sort of Stern would play on stereotypes, but really was kind of subtly undermining them. That was what Trump used to do in his earlier work.
Indeed. So, folks, as announced on this program yesterday, this is Kelly's final week. And, of course, then she took 2 days off. And she's coming back on Friday for her final day.
It's in style.
Yeah. I mean, that's the way you do it. And so you know what that means. I have had to log into ZipRecruiter, folks. And I had to be totally honest, I haven't posted the job yet because I'm still sort of figuring out what we're looking for. But do you know where to post the job to find the best candidates? I do. ZipRecruiter. Finding great talent can be tough, believe me. Believe me as I look around. Believe me. Thankfully, with ZipRecruiter, you can post your job to 100-plus job sites with just one click. Then their powerful technology efficiently matches the right people to your job better than anyone else. That's why ZipRecruiter is different. Unlike other job sites, ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them. In fact, 80% of employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate in just 24 hours. No juggling emails or calls to your office. This is the thing I'm psyched about. With all due respect, I don't want people calling me. Simply screen, rate, and manage candidates all in one place with ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use dashboard. Find out today, I'm going to find out later this afternoon, why ZipRecruiter has been used by businesses of all sizes to find the most qualified job candidates with immediate results. And right now, my listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, for free. And I got news for you. It's not just our listeners. This is great. This is super exciting for me. As soon as I find somebody new on ZipRecruiter,
came in this morning.
Yeah, I'm just going to fire each one of you guys one by one to do this again. Go to ZipRecruiter.
Very pro-labor programming. It's very good.
Well, it's not so much. I mean, I will be hiring other labor. It's just that.
I think joking about firing people and taking away their livelihoods is very in line with the politics you espouse. Very good.
Well,
it's very in line. Smart.
Well, I'm glad to know that you think you're getting a livelihood here. ZipRecruiter.com/majority.
Also very good. You woefully underpay us. Very in line with your values.
ZipRecruiter.com.
Then you laugh about it.
/majority. ZipRecruiter.com/majority. One more time. Try it for free. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/majority. And as you know, today is Wednesday, which means that it is Blue Apron Day at the Cedar household. I'm starting to think we should start it on Tuesdays, but we'll see. Once we get back into school, we get Blue Apron delivered to our place on Wednesdays. We have it Wednesday or Thursday, or sometimes we'll do like Wednesday and Friday. We could even do it Wednesday and Saturday, but I mean, you can get it any day for as many days as you want, but because we don't want to order in all the time. We don't always have time to make, and we don't have the imagination, with all due respect to us. School starting up again, schedule's getting a little tighter. Cooking becomes less of a priority. But for less than $10 a meal, Blue Apron makes it easy to create delicious seasonal recipes. They give you step-by-step instructions. They give you pre-portioned ingredients delivered right to your door so you don't have waste, which drives me nuts. You don't even have to go to the grocery store. Some of the meals available in September include, oh, this is going to drive me crazy, summer vegetable and egg paninis with Calabrian chili mayonnaise and caprese salad. You ready for this? Soy glazed pork and rice cakes with bok choy and marinated green beans. Skillet vegetable chili with cornmeal and cheddar drop biscuits. Garlic, butter, shrimp, and corn with green bean salad and roasted purple tomatoes. Right?
That sounds incredible.
And, you know, we have a stack of all these menus. I mean, not menus, recipes.
Oh, really?
You create your own recipe book. I wonder what would happen if I was actually to market that. It's just like the Majority Report recipe book. Each meal comes with a step-by-step, easy-to-follow recipe card. There you go. I mean, you could wait until I publish it all under the Majority Report banner, or you could just do this now.
Or you could wait.
And the best part is you get pre-proportioned ingredients. Every meal can be prepared in 40 minutes or less. You could check out this week's menu and get your first three meals free. Why would you not do this with free shipping? By going to blueapron.com/majority. blueapron.com/majority. Check it out. Blue Apron. It's a better way to cook. All right. So in that last clip, we had Morning Joe talk about how this should be easy to get a statutory version of DACA, of the Dreamers Act. And the reason why he says it should be easy, because he said you already start with 49 Democratic votes in the Senate. And you have, whatever it is, the entire Democratic caucus. What is that, 214 votes in the House. Now, this is important to note because it's important to note, A, because it's true, but B, because it is the theme that I'm pushing today, which is 194, sorry. And all you need is, 214 or 216 to get the majority, 214 to get the majority. So you need about 20 Republicans. But the fact that you have a completely unified Democratic caucus on this question of DACA is super significant, because it indicates a, I don't want to say dramatic, but a definitive change in the Democratic Party. In 2010, the House, Democratic House, passed a DREAM Act, which would have allowed undocumented immigrants to apply for citizenship if they entered the United States as children. DACA doesn't go that far. This would have gone further. If you had entered as a child without documentation and graduated from high school or had an equivalent degree, and you'd been in the U.S. for at least 5 years, so in 2010 it would have gone back to 2005, you had five Democrats in the Senate. Five Democrats in the Senate who voted against this.
Are they all gone, or is Tester voted against it?
Tester voted against it. The rest of the five are gone. Joe Manchin wasn't there for the vote.
Oh, he skipped it.
He skipped it. He said he would have opposed the bill, but he skipped it.
Mm.
So who knows?
And also, I watched his interview with Cenk, and I found his position on this literally indecipherable.
Well, that's the point. The Democratic Party has moved. He's gone from supposedly explicit to now, I'm really going to be vague about it.
Deeper than vague.
Yeah. But John Tester, in 2010, said that illegal immigration is a critical problem facing our country, but amnesty is not the solution. I do not support legislation that provides a path to citizenship for anyone in this country illegally. In fact, I remember this distinctly because Marcus Melitzes, who had championed John Tester in the primary, when he ran in the primary, I guess maybe it was in 2006, maybe off the top of my head, against the DLC, Marcos had made a big issue of this is going to be the first nail, if not the final nail, in the DLC coffin. And he sunk the DLC in that race. But when Tester voted against this, Marcos said, I'm done with you. Yesterday, John Tester said, America's immigration system is badly broken and needs fixing, but breaking a promise to these children who are here through no fault of their own is not the solution. Congress must work together, Democrats and Republicans, to secure our borders, crack down on folks illegally entering our country, and provide a way forward for innocent kids. So he's moved on this. I'm not saying send the guy a cookie, because to be against this, to me, is just beyond, like I said yesterday, it's sadistic.
Sadistic, racist, and strategic in terms of the sort of implications, yeah. I think, of who votes. You
right.
know.
And folks, make no mistake of what I'm saying. I'm not saying that any of these people were good people then or are good people now. I don't care. And I don't care if in their hearts of hearts they care about you. Politicians are not your mommy and daddy. Politicians are tools. And how a tool is used is a function of who grips that tool. Hope this is not getting weird.
And how, a tool and of how, our the, side.
How the tool gripper uses it. No, I remember on the old Majority Report, Bishop Tutu came on the program, and we were talking about religion, and he said, it's like a knife. It can cut butter. It can also get stuck in your chest.
Oh, wow. Sam Harris, I'm sure, would have some really important correctives on that.
Right.
Yeah. He would know better.
Senator Joe Donnelly voted against the DREAM Act as a House member in 2010. But he's going to be, he is supportive of it today as a senator. Claire McCaskill voted against the 2007 version of the DREAM Act. But then she voted for the 2010 version. You had Bernie Sanders voted against an 07 version. Because Labor was also very much against that, worried about, and to be fair here, there was a guest worker program that would have created a class of workers who could have very easily been exploited and underpaid and would have arguably made it much tougher on particularly some unions. But you've got unions now who are rallying against this. I mean, rallying for this, for, you know, a legislative fix. The coalition has changed. There was an interesting stat in a Washington Post piece. 3 in 4 Democrats were white 25 years ago. Now, just 57%. This is, I believe, this is in Congress.
Yeah, yeah, no, that makes sense.
The conservative Democrats, particularly white people in the South, are now Republicans. So you've had a big change in the Democratic Party in this regard. And it's moved quickly. Part of it explains some of the campaign strategy of the Clinton campaign. Certainly was reflected in what we saw with nascent ideas of this in the 2008 Obama campaign. But over the past 7 years, there's been a big change in the Democratic Party. And the Republican Party is going to feel a lot of pressure, or should. And like Joe Scarborough was just amazed by it. They're going to feel pressure. But at the end of the day, they know where their bread is buttered. And it's buttered at the racist milking and churning station.
The most I read, I
turning into Thomas Friedman today.
You are.
Yeah, is no, there, a cab driver any, told yeah, me all this say, on the way in.
You lost the cab driver anecdote.
My pedicab driver.
But the other the thing with that Friedman, I take every though, day is you'd work. Have to synchronize, you'd have to like mismatch a metaphor as well. It'd have to be like the butter that we churned out, what we waited in line for a JetBlue flight or something.
Like, well, it was like actually the Uber place. Of racist butter.
It was the Uber of racist butter in a transformed global economy where we don't just trade, we actually synchronize every second.
Now, so we had this argument earlier from Jeff Sessions and much of the Republican Party that this we have to get rid of DACA because it's unconstitutional. For a lot of Republicans, the next question is, okay, so, oh, in other words, the president will sign a legislative version of the DREAM Act. A Republican lawmaker, you'll vote for a statutory DREAM Act? Oh, no, actually, we won't. We were just saying the unconstitutional thing, so we didn't have to address the fact that we're full-on bigots. To his credit, Steve King, who I think probably takes a certain amount of pride in his bigotry, at least has come up with something more creative. Don't you understand that while it is sadistic and cruel to take people who have been, who grew up in this country, many of them not even realizing maybe that they were undocumented? You think it's cruel because you're a normal human being, but when you're Steve King and your mind operates like a computerized chess game, you're seeing that what might be sadistic to these people is actually benevolent to the rest of the world. Here he is on Breitbart Radio.
Another tweet you sent out this morning is former DACA in DACA X, apostrophe S DACA recipients will make great Peace Corps volunteers in their home countries. None would take more hardship or risk than we ask of the Peace Corps. Can you explain that tweet?
Well, yes. I mean, people are saying, well, you send these poor DACA kids back to a country that they never knew. And the language they don't speak, a place where they don't have any connections whatsoever. That's not true. That's how they paint it. They say, these are valedictorians. They're the salt of the earth. They're all good people, and they're the cream of the crop. And some of them do fit that category, but there's a lot of
them
that don't.
I'm sure some of them are nice.
So I'm making this point that if we shut off the DACA program, and there are 800,000 of them in the United States today, they would deploy, and I use that word that way, back to their home territories most likely. And they would go back there with a U.S. taxpayer-funded education. Many of them are college education. They would have top-notch English skills. They would understand how a free enterprise economy works, how a generally corrupt-free society, first world, works. They would have seen the transportation systems we have, the educational system, the research and development systems that we have, how civilized people interact with each other. All of that would go with them back to their home countries.
Pause it. I just want to, and you can dial it back. I just want you to play that, how a civilized people interacts with each other. Well, I don't know where he thinks these people are from. I don't know. Maybe like we're sending back, people who were raised by wolves or in caves or something. But how a civilized people interact with each other. Incidentally, and of course the irony is, we're taking these people and deporting them out of the country because that's the civilized thing to do. But here we go.
Best taxpayer-funded education. Many of them are college education. They would have top-notch English skills. They would understand how a free enterprise economy works, how a generally corrupt-free society, first world, works. They would have seen the transportation systems we have, the educational system, the research and development systems that we have, how civilized people interact with each other. All of that would go with them back to their home countries. And wouldn't that be the best economic and cultural development, a civilizational development, that, say, Mexico could ever experience? Be to get, if these are their best and brightest, some of them are, but just give it to the people that advertise DACA, and what if their words are right? Send them back home again. It'll have far more impact than you'll get out of Peace Corps volunteers.
Well, I mean, if that's really the agenda, let's just send randomly the graduating class of, let's say, all the Ivy League schools. 1, 2, 3, 4.
I think we already basically have. Those three. are the people that run places like Mexico, which is why they have so many problems. But we'll get your point.
Send them back. Send hundreds of thousands of them.
Okay, yeah. Just not the ones that went to the Kennedy School.
Right.
That is... Also, I mean, and I know you have the stat, but there's the enormous racism and obvious subtext that, I mean, he mentioned Mexico specifically, but some of these places that people are going to get sent back to are quote unquote first or second world countries, like in South Korea,
right?
The Philippines. I mean, it's a second world.
Yeah, tens
Poland,
of thousands of them. I mean, certainly the majority of the folks
will be
from Latin America,
which is of course what he's really talking about.
3,000 from Poland, 5,000 from India, 15,000 from South Korea, 8,000 from the Philippines, 6,000 from Jamaica. The vast majority are going to go back to Central America.
Also, I don't think that anybody...
Not even go back. I mean, well, I guess go back. But, you're talking about after a long time. But, I mean, he doesn't... You know, the idea... I mean, just how depraved and psychotic... To justify this stuff, it really is just stunning.
He's a racist sociopath, but I think that I understand the obvious reason why we pick examples when we talk about something like DACA of somebody who is say a valedictorian or has done everything right. But I, at some point, like I actually think, yeah, there's a bigger point. Like you shouldn't have to be an extraordinary achiever for this program to cover you. And I actually think it's interesting that in his despicable way, he's identifying a weakness with those sort of arguments that we identify like this extraordinary exceptional example, when really it's like, hey, maybe he's just a normal kid who got some B's and some C's, and maybe he's like, I don't know, not going to set the world on fire, but they were raised here. They're a good person.
Well,
and it's disgusting to send them back to a place they don't know. It's a human rights abuse, regardless of who they are and how they did in school.
I mean, I understand rhetorically why this is done.
Yeah,
and I think, you know, yesterday we got a call from Ronald Reagan, who's an immigration lawyer, who doesn't like even the framing of were brought here by no fault of their own.
Right.
As if their parents, who are responding to the fact that economic opportunity has been swallowed up in Central America, or they're afraid of getting murdered in the murder capital of the world.
All due to our policies, a function in many
of,
respects.
Yes, of NAFTA, you know, where an ear of corn in Mexico, grown in Mexico, is twice as expensive as one that is grown in the United States. I mean, all of those things. Or even as if it's really that bad of an issue. Like, they're coming here to do something wrong. They're infecting us by their presence. All of those framings are
problematic.
There, you
said
it.
They're infecting us by their presence.
Right.
That's what they're saying.
Of course.
What
let me just add. And I would add, too, that, you know, you see statistics like one-third less likely to commit crimes than native-born Americans. You know, 92% employed, which is a pretty impressive number for when you talk about average age of 26. All of this, yes, these things are cited as some way of basically trying to convince bigots that your bigotry is irrational. I don't know if that works, frankly. I think what it does is it increases the self-righteousness of, you know, folks like, you know, the Joe Scarboroughs of the world. And it makes it a little bit easier maybe to create a narrative. So there's probably rhetorical value in it. But yes, largely speaking,
of course. But I think
speaking,
it's like everything
course,
else. It's the whole kind of means testing culture. It undermines the broader argument that everybody just should have basic guarantees and rights. And
we see this with Muslim Americans, too. Who are like,
yeah, exactly.
They fought in the, you know, this guy, you know, was in the military. He's earned his American citizenship. Well, no, if you're Muslim and you're an American citizen, you don't have to earn your citizenship any more than anybody else does, because nobody does.
Right. Yeah. It's, I think also I liked that what Hayes tweeted the other day, which is he said that if you've ever driven under the influence of anything, you've committed a more dangerous illegal action than anybody who crossed the border.
Drugs,
yeah,
and not illegal drugs, but if you bought drugs from Canada, if you're a senior citizen and you have gotten drugs from Canada via the internet, you have committed a more serious crime.
Right. Right.
Much more serious. It's a civil violation to enter into this country,
right,
without documentation. And the vast majority, particularly of this subset of immigrants, only came in once, which means that they didn't, they, you know, if you get deported and come back, it becomes a more, not, I don't know that it's a felony, but it becomes more criminal.
Did you know that when Joe Scarborough was in Congress, he introduced a bill to eliminate the United States' relationship with the UN? There would be a transitionary period, and then we wouldn't do things with the UN anymore.
He's an internationalist.
He's a really
right.
moderate.
One other point I wanted to make that took place over, or that was manifested over the past, over last week. And Dave Weigel, writing for the CIA, had a piece that about what's happening in the Democratic Party over the issue of antitrust, or as he calls it, anti-monopoly. Now, if you've been listening to this program for the past year and change, maybe I guess now, gosh, year and a half, 2 years. You know that one of the things that we were talking about and one of the things we were anticipating with the election of a Hillary Clinton was the ascendance of Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren in the Senate and the agenda of antitrust or anti-monopoly rising. We've had a number of guests since the election.
Two were actually before.
Lena Khan we had in 2014 when these themes were starting to develop. There was an initiative at the, is it New America Foundation?
New America Foundation.
Run by this guy, Barry Lynn, called the Open Markets Initiative. And we had Barry Lynn on in October, the last week of October, in anticipation of this big push by folks within the Democratic Party to push for a return to the antitrust positions that we had during much of the 20th century, which was that large corporations, when they get too large, when they create monopolies, are fundamentally anti-democratic. That not only can they distort prices and services for consumers, but they infringe upon the development of rivals. They infringe upon the freedoms that we have in a society. That they are toxic to a democracy in a multitude of ways. In the late 70s, early 80s, the Chicago School, Chicago University, University of Chicago, School of Thought, led by Robert Bork, pushed that monopolies are only bad and we should exercise antitrust law only as a function of consumer welfare. So in other words, if a huge company can provide cheaper prices than two smaller companies or three smaller companies or four smaller companies or five smaller companies, then we should not restrict it with antitrust laws. With no regard of the power that company will have in terms of public policy, with no regard as to the power that that company has in stifling innovation, with no regard as to that power that company has to stifle competition and the value of competition, and frankly, with only a short-sighted notion of what constitutes consumer welfare. And under Reagan and subsequent to that, certainly within as recently as the Obama administration telling its Federal Trade Commission to not worry about Google, Facebook, even Microsoft was left on the table when George Bush came in. The DOJ was looking at Microsoft back then. We have had a diminishing, I guess, and a shrinking notion of what antitrust enforcement should be. And you can go back, you can listen to the Barry Lynn interview that we did in October 25th of 2016. You can search for, if you are, particularly if you're a member and you're on the app, or if you're using our app, you can look for Lena Khan back in 2014. Not directly having to do with antitrust, but basically taking on the issue of Amazon. You can listen to, in June of this year, K. Sabeel Rahman, Democracy Against Domination. Similarly, about antitrust and anti-monopoly. You can listen to Matt Stoller in July of this past year. And all of this blew out into the open over the week we were off when Barry Lynn was fired and Open Markets was jettisoned from the New America Foundation. Now, look, there's a lot of controversy around this narrative. But broadly speaking, it appears that because New America Foundation got most of its funding, huge amount of its funding, from Eric Schmidt of Google, it created internal tensions over the years. And as Open Markets and this idea of anti-monopoly became more and more mainstreamed into Democratic ideas, in June of last year, 2016, Elizabeth Warren gave a big speech at an Open Markets conference. So the tension was mounting internally. And there's a lot of dynamics about think tanks that I won't bore you with. But the tension was mounting when Google was fined by the EU by, I think, with $2.6 billion. This happened a couple months ago. Barry Lynn wrote an op-ed congratulating EU regulators. And it appears like this was the final straw. It's unclear how much pressure was there. It's unclear how much pressure you need. If you're a think tank, I mean, look, I got news for you folks. If I'm getting $25 million from, you know, the button-down collar shirt business, it's one thing for Michael to come in dressed like he's, you know, it's Sunday morning. He's just going outside to get the paper on his stoop, wearing his
Tony
slippers.
Tony Soprano tracksuit.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But if he starts articulating that collared shirts are bad.
Yeah, particularly on you.
I'm just in general. I don't need to hear from the guy who's giving me $25 million to support collared shirts. I'm like, hey, dude. I'm going to expect that he's not going to like that, or she. The promoter of college shirts, I'm going to be like, you know what? Maybe it's time.
Warren's coming to our next conference. Sorry.
Cut it. You know, knock it off. And that's the part where you see, you know, the power of these entities. Now, of course, Eric Schmidt doesn't have to give money to New America Foundation and whatnot, but for him, it's like, he's got billions because of an outfit like Google. And so New Markets, or I should say Open Markets, spun off. And they have launched a new project and site, Citizens Against Monopoly. And it's interesting. Like I said, Dave Weigel wrote about this and noted the change in the Democratic Party, because this made it part of, you know, the marginally better deal. The best part of that marginally better deal was the adoption of anti-monopoly rhetoric and disposition. We also saw this even in Al Franken's and others' grilling of Gorsuch during the Supreme Court fight. You're quashing the little guy. It's interesting. Anne Marie Slaughter, the head of the New America Foundation, in writing more about what led to Barry Lynn's dismissal, wrote this. Barry's new organization and campaign against Google is the opening salvo. And from her perspective, I think part of what happened here was there was this tension. It became essentially untenable. And Barry Lynn and his group used this tension as a way of moving this issue to the forefront. And she wrote in a Medium post, Barry's new organization campaign against Google is the opening salvo of one group of Democrats versus another group of Democrats in the run-up to the 2020 election. I personally think the country faces far greater challenges of racism, violence, a broken political system, and geographic and partisan divisions so great that we're losing any common sense of what we stand and strive for as a country. Now, it's fascinating. There's a couple of things that's fascinating about this statement to me. All right, put aside whether or not, you know, all the stuff with New America Foundation. What's fascinating about this is the idea that, A, open markets actually wrote quite a bit about the problems of monopolies and what it does in terms of black and brown-owned businesses. But the idea of a broken political system is both a function of antitrust and anti-monopoly and also provides less enforcement. You want to lessen geographic and partisan divisions? Antitrust policy or anti-monopoly policy is a great way to do it. There was some polling done. In April of 2016, Hart Research Associates conducted polling. It surveyed 1,100 voters, 341 from the decisive Rust Belt states, and found just a slim majority saying Democrats favored, quote, average Americans over large corporations and banks. The polling found corporate monopolies viewed negatively by 66% of all voters and 70% of Rust Belt voters. The words corporate monopolies. What's interesting is just 21% of Rust Belt voters, however, favored antitrust laws, which means that that's probably an antiquated phrase. But in other words, if you want to reach across partisan and geographic divides, running against corporate monopolies and actually implementing and executing an agenda against corporate monopolies is a great place to start. So this is something to keep an eye on. And also be clear here. You know, this is not socialist policy. This is well within your mainstream capitalism. It's just we have veered away from that.
Well, we haven't had that kind of mainstream capitalism for decades.
Well, that's true.
It's a question.
That's true.
No, but it's absolutely not socialistic. But I just want to highlight, I think, you know, this deployment of, regardless of the specifics, but Anne-Marie Slaughter, and it goes back, you know, when Hillary Clinton said to Bernie in one of those debates, he went on one of his Wall Street rants, and she said, you know, Wall Street won't solve racism. It was breathtakingly disingenuous because of how actually Wall Street abuse does, regulating Wall Street will not solve racism. And of course, it's totally disingenuous because Wall Street run amok does disproportionately affect people of color.
But even if it doesn't.
That's exactly. It's an insane. But I'm saying that even the phraseology, like, this Democrats that don't want to rein in corporate power are going to, the new ballywick is to disingenuously exploit really important social justice and racial issues. And that's all over that Slaughter statement. It's like, we don't have time to deal with corporate monopolies and inequality because Trump is president, essentially, is what she's saying. And I mean, it's just going to show up everywhere. That's going to be the kind of tactic.
The fact
of the
matter is,
pseudo-woke
center. Trump is while Trump is president, we're not going to do anything about monopolies. But we're not going to do anything about anything. The question is, from a rhetorical standpoint, what's going to get you elected? And this would certainly help.
Oh, certainly. But I don't, I mean, clearly talking there's some about, across purposes there with some of these people, well, just even with look at the funding question.
It is the functional equivalent of Jeff Sessions going up there and saying, the reason why we're rolling back DACA is because of constitutional reasons, as opposed to we're rolling back DACA because we don't want brown people in our country. And when whomever, Anne Marie Slaughter or whomever it is, says the reason why we don't want to deal with monopolies is because we've got racism, it's also just as disingenuous. I got news for you. You can do both. And not only can you do both, even if they were mutually exclusive, they're not mutually exclusive. So
they're actually synchronized.
But
yeah.
But this is a growing movement within the Democratic Party. And you know, the reality is that at least in terms of the public's imagination, Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders have as much power as, well, certainly the Anne Marie Slaughters. I mean, but the question is, you know, how much does this catch on amongst Democratic voters, Democrat Party at large? But all right, well, that's it for today, folks. Those are the two big things I want to talk about that are relevant and how we're relevant next week. We'll come back with a guest tomorrow, right, Michael?
Yeah, potentially.
And then on Friday, just a little house cleaning. We're going to be starting early, as early as 11 a.m. on the East Coast time. Maybe even a moment or two earlier than that.
I thought you were aiming for 10 of 11.
Well, 10 of 11. I don't want
it
to.
It's a kind of rando time.
Well, you know, it's Kelly's last day on Friday.
Yes.
But we got to end by 2 on that day. Folks,
goodbye.
It is your support that makes this show possible. And you can become a member by going to jointhemajorityreport.com. And just a reminder, commercials bothering you? We had 2 today. If you don't want to hear commercials, the best way to do that is become a member. You want extra material? Best way to do that is to become a member. Want to make sure this show is here day in, day out? Best way to do that, become a member. We're going to be rolling out a new website soon. We're going to be updating the app soon. We're talking about getting, hopefully, it's scary to upgrade some equipment sometimes just because it's a big expense, but we may get a little bit nicer board. I'm not sure exactly what that's, if people will know that, but
I think they'll be able to hear it.
Do you think so? It's possible.
I think so.
All that and more, folks. So become a member today. Go to jointhemajorityreport.com. And as always, if you don't have the financial resources, but you want the extra content, please send us an email at majorityreporters@gmail.com. We will hook you up. Also, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY. Get 10% off. And if you buy crap from Amazon or you buy stuff from jet.com, at the very least, do it through our link at majorityreportkickback.com. We get a kickback. We'll be right back.
646-257-3920. She said, no, no, no. Sad.